Blog Talk Radio.
PLM, baby.
These various rappers are so hilarious. We'll put the mic down, but you ain't qualified to carry this. Your tracks are garbage, your bars are miscellaneous. So throwing your joint at my car was spontaneous. Oh shit, I got you feeling nervous on purpose. I love bringing that shit right at you, door to door service. Instantaneous, you would still get your shit bust on these spontaneous.
All aboard the Spontaneous Express. Nevertheless, always the more. From the pool table to the kitchen floor. Next stop, the G-Spot. Luda!
Get to be
I won't Do that, baby. Would you do that, baby?
Come on and go with me.
وحدك يا مسافر وحدك وصايتني لتبعد عني لتبعد عني وتشغلني
Running. Hello, everyone. So glad that you could make it with us from coast to coast and around the world of our Evan here with you once again. Now, you know, that is the true mark of a DJ, where you could ask him to bring out some good belly dancing music and he can incorporate it in a mix in which his quality went through. I love it. I love it. So I am a man of few words tonight because I am excited about this show, and I am excited about the topic at hand. And, of course, this is not only a part of the wonderful amount of programming here on Spontaneous Radio Online, another exclusive. You know, I'm just going to stop talking. I'm going to introduce my fellow host here tonight. DJFX, get right to the show because we got a lot to talk about. I got a lot of questions. My hips, as Shakira says, don't lie. But it's not telling the truth tonight. I can't do what our guests do tonight. But can you, DJFX? Good evening.
Good evening to you as well. I am another one who is excited to get into this show. So I'm like you. I'm going to go through introductions as quick as I possibly can because I'm willing to hear and learn about the culture that I'm pretty sure that Mr. Al Powell is going to talk about later on. But before I go into that, I want to thank and take time and thank our 20 million plus listeners for tuning in and blazing the emails. We must be doing something right, right? So, yeah, we greatly appreciate you all for tuning in and letting us know how you feel and letting us know, like, hey, keep it coming. So, again, thanks to you all. And I also want to give USA a shout-out for their accomplishments at the Olympics in Tokyo this year. So far, they are third in gold medals at 4, where Japan is second with 5, and China is currently first with 6. But we certainly wish all competitors good luck in their games. Even if you only have 2 representatives Some countries may only have one. So if you got two, your chances of getting gold is double. Remember that. All right. Now, as we all know, none of this is possible without our beautiful PLM boss, Miss Spontaneous, the female artist who was managed by Tupac Shakur. She is also a three-time Hall of Fame inductee, sold over 352 million of movies and still selling today. She has also received 9 awards of her accomplishments in the entertainment industry, including a Lifetime Achievement Award. Also, our beautiful boss became the valedictorian of her class of 2020 from Full Sail University, and she will become Dr. Spontaneous of Business Administration and Strategic Marketing in 2023, including a second book that will be released about her life with her manager, Tupac Shakur, authored by none other than Kevin Powell. As you know, this show is being brought to you by Spontaneous Radio Online, as my colleague has mentioned before, the one-stop shop for all of our PLM shows and events. So please stay updated for all upcoming shows and interviews. Now, like I said, I want to make sure that I got through this quickly so that way we can get into the crux of the matter because I'm waiting on this. Now it's time for the moment that you all have been waiting for, stepping to the stage, bringing you that sweet Philly sound all the way from Philly, home of the cheesesteak, home of the cracked bell, and your original nation's capital. He is a legend. He is an icon. Peggy Bundy calls him Al. Mr. Al Powell, what is going on, bro? Yeah.
I wouldn't know where. One is to say super duper thank you to everybody. DJ FX, who I've been on the phone with a little bit earlier, helping me out with that killer mix on the way into the show with some belly dancing stuff going on.
Yeah, that was excellent.
Wonderful. I got to tell a little background here. And LeVar, thank you so much. Hope your travels went well a little earlier throughout your day. And I, like I said, I'm in a very envious position. I need some help here. I am sitting across from one of the most beautiful, talented, funny, intelligent, amazing women in the city. I am very lucky to have her here. I am telling you, it's amazing. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, should I stop talking at any given point, please say the word like pineapple, because I will be transfixed by her beauty. And it has to do with the fact that I'm just like captivated. So, but I'm lucky. I know how to get out of these things. So I am actually stepping on a small little tack that will keep me in a little bit of like centered in the moment. I like that. So I am with very beautiful Misha. And I would like to introduce you to Misha. So the floor is yours.
Al, first of all, I'm speechless. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. And Spontaneous, thank you very much. I am very fortunate to be in this spot right now. This is the first time I have ever in my life done a radio interview, so I am a bit nervous. Take it easy on me.
20 million people.
Oh, boy.
You're with family. You're with family. You're good.
Yep. Yes, we're all friends here.
And DJ Bliss, and then also LeVar, have always made me feel comfortable. So
I'm a good hand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, no.
These guys will chime in. They ask questions you don't think about, and it's a beautiful thing.
Great. I'm excited to discuss this topic. It's very near and dear to me, and it's been my whole life, practically, belly dancing.
I've been lucky enough to see Misha perform. In fact, where we are right now, it's a place called Zesty's. It's a Middle Eastern restaurant in Manion, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. And I've come here over the years, and I've seen Misha perform, and it's been amazing. She is truly motion and very nice. And I've come here and I've seen music or heard the music, and she's just poetry in motion, the way I always put it. So I'm going to try to dig deep in this because there's magic that I'm trying to uncover. And when I originally approached Spontaneous, I said I really would like to actually approach the subject of belly dancing, call it say from the inside. I mean, truly get an idea of what it's like to be a belly dancer, what it's like to perform, how they're taught, traditions. And the first person to talk to is Misha. I mean, it's just really that simple. She has a very wonderful story. She's grown up with all this stuff her whole life. And we talked about it for a little bit, and she said, yeah, Al, actually, I'm in. So that's where we are. My first question would be, when did you get started?
Okay. So I've been belly dancing since I can remember, from my earliest years. I grew up around the music, which I grew up around Arabic music. My background is Lebanese, second generation. My relatives own a very famous Middle Eastern restaurant in Philadelphia, which is called the Middle East Restaurant. So that played a large part on how I was influenced. I grew up watching many, many, many belly dancers, all different styles, around live music. My cousins are Middle Eastern musicians.
Phenomenal.
Also at home, you know, I would watch my aunts and family members dance. They would do a more maybe watered down or folk version of belly dancing, of what you see now in like at events or in restaurants or clubs. And I was just captured by it. I guess you could say initially it was the music that kind of put its hooks in me. And it was the music really infected my, you know, if I could use that word, infected my soul. I was very young. Like, I could say even, you know, like toddler years, okay, I wasn't doing a polished belly dance at three, but I was up there in the middle of the stage in the restaurant and
featured performer at three.
Right, yeah. And
wow.
Uncle Ed, Joe, I think you guys may know Joe or plays this sort of Becky.
Yeah.
So his dad was playing daoud, which is another Arabic instrument. It looks like a lute, but it has a bent neck and it doesn't have frets on it. And it has some very beautiful beat-sounding, haunting melodies, I guess you could say. And so my Uncle Eddie was playing that, and I got up to dance. And that's when I got my first dancing name. And he coined me Little Beirut. So I then went on now, but I was initially Little Beirut.
Wow. How long were you that name? Like five?
No, I think from three on until I became Alexandria. And I became Alexandria. When I started performing at the Taj Mahal Casino.
Oh, okay.
And Joe was in that group, too.
Okay.
We had so much fun. It was really a time to remember. But we had a group that we were basically the Taj Mahal Rovers, and we would rove around the casino and, for, you know, like performances here and there. And I think I chose, I'm not really sure how I got Alexandria. It's something as simple as, they needed a name that started with at the end to kind of make it flow. And they would introduce us. And so I'm like, okay, Alexandria. So that's how that was. Then as I moved on and got older, I just kind of wanted to be connected to who I was as a stage name. And Misha, very close to my real name, which is Michelle. And it's also what
that's
other,
why you heard me stumble around.
Yeah. It's also with other, you know, Arabic people might call me as, say, like a nickname or a term of endearment or, you know, kind of be cute. So I adopted Misha as my permanent stage name.
Yeah, she could be, you know, you could find her on like Misha Dance if you wanted to look her up as well. which I suggest. Yeah. I mean, you actually get to see it perform as well. I was going to say what she referred to about being at the Taj Mahal. So that would be the Taj Mahal in Atlantic City.
Oh, yes.
Was the big casino. And I had a lot of people in my rehearsal studios prepare music for this particular show. And you had somebody on stilts, right? And you had somebody.
Actually, yes.
Is that Roger?
Matt,
okay.
No. Did you know Matt? Matt Calder.
No. I think I've seen
him. Okay. He was a good friend of Joe's.
Okay.
So Joe and Matt were both on stilts. And was that
I mean, like, they have videos of these guys walking around. You know, you have Misha in the front.
We weren't a very traditional. I wouldn't say that was a very traditional Arabic ensemble.
Right, right. As best as you can do with casinos involved.
Right, especially like that one.
I remember seeing videos, I guess it was like a promo that you guys were putting together, and I saw like people walking on stilts and like in costumes and playing the oud and other instruments that are Middle Eastern.
Yeah, it was more of like kind of a roving entertainment act.
Right, right.
It was amazing.
It was
really nice.
How long did that last? I forget.
Oh, gosh. So I wasn't there from the beginning, but I'd say that lasted, I'm just going to throw out a number here. I can't, it'd be 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That was wonderful.
Yeah, it was a while, but I wasn't there for the full extent of it. I came like mid.
To give you an idea, or try to give you an idea, of the breadth and the history of the Middle East restaurant, at some point you have to talk to Spontaneous. She had been there a while. In fact, that was what largely prompted the show to begin with. It's like, hey, Al, hey, I remember I've been in Philly my whole life. I don't think there's been any family of people that haven't done something there. I don't care what your background is. I don't care what your ethnicity is. I don't care about any of it. At some point, you'll have a conversation with somebody, and they will have been to the Middle East restaurant. It's truly amazing. I mean,
yeah, it was parties, an institution in the city. I mean, it really was.
And Michelle and I were talking just a few minutes ago about something that's, to me, very close to home. Middle Eastern music and Michelle, her family, and the people here at Zesty's, there's this thing that's, I didn't really understand it until a friend of mine brought it to my attention. Our buddy Bruce Kaminsky is a very phenomenal bass player and musician, and he sat in with all these musicians playing Middle Eastern music, and he brought to my attention, he goes, Al, if you think about it, when you go to these things, you know, the Middle East, see people playing, because people look at the stage, just, you know, take a deep breath, look across the stage, and look at the instruments, and you'll see somebody playing an oud. You'll see somebody playing the bass. Because, you know, the guy playing the oud is Armenian. Somebody else is from Turkey. And then he's sitting next to somebody from Greece. And if you look at the map, and these people have thought vigorously. And in fact, you could actually speak to some of these guys, and they could very quickly say, oh, yeah, you know, so-and-so's family came into our family and our village and like, ransacked. But here, it's really about music. And these guys are sitting across from one another, wholeheartedly expressing themselves with music and the love of the instrument. And it's just amazing. It was truly, I know music is an awful lot of conversation gets talked about, like music and peace and, I'm sorry, more like love. Oh, I love this and I love that. But this is like a true manifestation of peace. Like people are...
A way music brings people together.
Yes, exactly.
For sure.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's great to serve with a long history of fighting and turmoil for Arabs and Jews. On the stage there and in the Middle East, they were sharing their commonalities, because there was so much common about their music, and also learning from each other's different styles.
Yeah. it was done in such a way that, I mean, it's still to this day for me personally very internal. And then the beauty of it is to have somebody like Michelle come out and dance, and then just really it just becomes magical to watch Michelle dance and to actually see music. It just turns into emotion. It actually, it's a physicality that is pretty amazing. There's a lot that goes into it. That's one of the things that brought me to Michelle, was to actually have her explain some of the moves and just like how it all, it, like I said, for me, I'm just a guy standing there, and usually with a camera or a video, and I'm like, wow, look at that. It's amazing. And it just encompasses everything. It encompasses tradition. It encompasses like a sort of like a flirtatiousness and stuff like that. And, so my question to Michelle, we have many. We have all kinds of notes here. So how about
what belly dancing is. So it's from a physical or a dance general overview of what it is. It goes from very graceful arm and hand movements to very rhythmic and earthy movement. You know, it's very ethereal at times. We were reaching very softly and lightly and gracefully to the sky, but we're firmly planted in the earth. It, you know, I don't want to sound new agey here, but but I think what once you get into dance form, and I think what does kind of capture people who the dance form, is you really do find a certain connection within and a centering that you might get, say, that some people might experience. They're not similar views. They're different places.
But the object is the same.
But the idea, I feel most connected when I'm dancing this particular dance.
Okay.
And I always have, obviously.
Yeah. I've heard other dancers say the same thing.
I'm not surprised. It really does offer that. You know, it's like you are the sense, you find your center between, and not to sound funny, but just as an analogy, between the sky and the earth.
Oh, okay. I see.
Would that make you
give
a picture of what that
it
what
does.
I'm trying to say?
Oh, absolutely. You're the linkage between the two.
Just things I can use to give you a visual description.
It's interesting. There's a little bit of a spiritual connection there. I guess I think of belly dancing, and the way I see it performed is, let's say, from left to right or side to side. But the way she just described it, plus I also get the very wonderfulness of actually having stuff displayed in front of me, so the hands waving and everything is very wonderful.
You're saying a lot happening at once, but people don't realize it. I think what they only see is the shimmying.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the shaking.
Right.
You know, or the shimmying, or the, oh, God.
Your belly roll.
The, you know, like the pot.
I was going to ask, you mentioned something that made me think. You mentioned the spiritual, touching the sky and the earth. I see a lot of belly dancers, or have seen a lot of belly dancers, even in here, that dance barefoot.
One of them.
Okay.
Although I started wearing shoes recently, but So for me, I feel like I just have better command of my dancing, of my movement, when I'm barefoot, as opposed to. I also tend to be like, I'm a dancer that doesn't like to be confined quite a lot. So I'm not one that uses props a lot.
Okay.
Although I find props extremely beautiful, and I have used shoes like props for me.
Okay.
Are like, I feel like they're confining my move, my full range of movement, or my, you know, in my personal style.
I was going to ask, Michelle and I were talking a little bit earlier about the dress, like just the whole thing of the veil and the different costumes like that. Some of these women, all these women, it's just amazing. I mean, you have poetry in motion, you have fluidity, and then you have these veils and certain things that I'm sure are like very thoughtfully picked out, like colors, fabrics.
A lot, because costuming is a very huge part. It's actually quite expensive.
Well,
so it's belly dancing, it's not something that is going to be a full career, which isn't easy to do.
Right.
it's a very costly form of dance, because like an average costume, an average typical traditional modern day costume, I'd say it's between $400 and $500.
Wow.
And you need many.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. And that's, there is the range. You can find lower, and they're very nice.
Right.
But the average is somewhere else.
But you can't afford to have stuff mess. I mean, almost like any other discipline, when you're dancing with your veils and everything is on, you can't afford to have stuff not be where it's supposed to be. Like, in other words, you're all about being clothed in a very unique, sexy way, and or like it's all part of this this conversation we're having. Like, it's all part of this movement and or transmission of the connection. You're trying to essentially be movement accented by clothing.
By costuming.
Right.
Costuming is big part. Now, with that being said, there are certainly dancers who make much less expensive costumes, and they make them themselves, and that's just fine.
Right.
I'm talking in the general picture.
My question, I do have a question here, I guess, as far as you mentioned like accessories and stuff like that, like the sword. I see belly dancers with sword. Now, is there a tradition involved in that? Belly dancers, are they given that sword as a mentor?
Well, that's possible. I know, I think Amalia recently, who's another dancer in our Philadelphia dance community, she has a sword that her dance teacher gave her she cherishes. I've seen her post about that.
Okay.
But it's not a tradition that I'm aware of.
Okay.
And swords themselves, I wouldn't necessarily say the sword is traditional either. Understanding of how the sword came into being a part of belly dance is a lot of the Orientalist painters who would paint like Algerian women with the sword on their head or a belly dancer, 1700s or 1800s with a sword on her head, and that was adopted into the dance.
Wow.
My understanding of it.
So when I watch a belly dancer pretty much with a sword and like candles, I guess I've seen a tray, candles.
That's moving into something a little more traditional. Candles.
Wow.
So the sword, like I said, may have been adopted. It's not necessarily a tradition that I'm aware of within my experience of movies.
I was definitely fooled. I always thought this was like part of
I always associate sword personally with the Turkish style of dancing. And I think another reason I may do that is because a lot of the swords, which are called scimitars, are called Turkish swords. Or they're referred to as Turkish swords. So maybe that's why I associate Turkish style belly dancing with using the sword more often.
Okay.
But that's my
That actually poses me a question of the difference between, let's say, Turkish, Armenian, Greek. Like, where is belly dancing done in the world, and how different is it between cultures? I guess what I'm trying to say, is there like more arm movement with Egyptian women? Is there more? People dance all the time. I'm riveted to it. I see what looks to be similar things, but maybe not quite. People dance much more on their tippy toes. Some people dance
in 6-inch to let it.
I mean, I
generally like perform without shoes, but there are certain styles that are actually, it's useful to wear a heel in.
Okay.
If you're kind of more standing still and not dance, not using much space on the floor.
Okay.
So to go back to your question, though, belly dancing, actually, let's start with that term.
Okay,
So belly dancing, as some may know, is kind of aptly named. It's not necessarily a dance of the belly. I think the story goes that back in the 1800s at the Chicago World Fair, there were a group of Algerian dancers.
Well, bars neck of the woods.
Yes. There were a group of Algerian dancers that were doing, I guess, a kind of abdominal movements, something that resembles maybe a belly dance today or a belly dance of the North African region. And the and a Frenchman, who I believe is also a promoter at the Chicago Fair at that time, termed it in French, danse de ventre, which is basically a stomach dance. So, and hence, that's where we adapted it in English as belly dance.
Wow.
So that name kind of stuck. But the real Arabic name for belly dance, and I'll say it in two ways, because you might have a different dialect, shurki, which is Eastern dance, or shurki, which is the same thing, slightly different accent. And that is that translates as Eastern dance.
Okay.
So it's not, we're not translating it as belly dance.
Okay.
It's very much an American, European term.
Michelle has brought to my attention many things that I've gotten completely wrong, which I don't mind.
I don't mind either.
I know I don't mind.
It's just the fact that, like, I'm an American male, and I think what I'm watching belly dancing, just like I said, just even the, as it's been pointed out, is that the term is wrong. Like, if I were to truly go back to its original place and I said, hey, is there any belly dancers around here? Somebody would look at me like, what are you talking about? Like, I'd have to say those words.
Yeah. And I think what you and I were talking about even earlier are some of the implications, too, stem from this era, from that period at the Chicago Fair.
Wow.
Where, it was termed belly dance, and then it became such a thing, like, this hoochie coochie is what I think they call it.
Wow.
The hoochie coochie dance.
Wow.
And
right there.
Yeah, right? from there, the hoochie coochie was adopted by many burlesque styles.
Okay.
And so was the costuming.
Okay.
As time went on. So you might see some modern day burlesque.
I think of like 1920s.
Or even the 20s, right?
Absolutely. I think of like burlesque almost like right there all the time.
Yeah. So so now, as you had mentioned before, now we have like a cultural dance now becoming like more associated with a burlesque style.
Okay.
At least in these parts of the world.
Right. Okay.
But it's still a cultural dance where it came from. So a lot of times what you'll find is that people are not seeing it for what it is, which is the cultural dance. They're seeing it for another dance, which is fine.
Right.
That dance is fine, but it's not
that
dance. It's another form. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, we're talking about two different forms of dance.
Yeah.
And, maybe one has adopted, or maybe they've adopted things from each other, especially currently.
During the time that you've been doing stuff here in Philadelphia, I guess I'm trying to think of, like, exactly what you're talking about right now. Is there a morphing of, let's say, Americanism? Like, right now, you just said somebody drew stuff, a painting, drew a sword of on a woman and made that a balanced thing. He was given a name, which was French, and then converted.
And he's, you know, this is what I understand
how right.
things may have developed. It's
right.
not my
no.
personal. Okay.
Yeah. I see where there's an awful lot of interpretation. And there's like the fluidity of it all is amazing to me. And the fact that I think, at least from my perspective, here, like I said, here I am, a guy, I come, I think I know what it is, and it's not what it's being really wrong. Like, for instance, I guess a common thing, like if I find myself discussing belly dance with other guys, they think that it's like it's all strippers, and they think it's like pole dancing and stuff. And I find myself having to have to back up a little bit, like, whoa, slow down. This is the very intense art form. Not that other...
Cultural.
Cultural
really
is probably the better word.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to take away from what might be the other discipline. Like,
no,
but,
they're it's not about... Because they have adopted from each other. Even
current
belly dancing today, you'll see many aspects that aren't necessarily traditional, that may have borrowed from other dance forms. But belly dancing is a cultural dance that came from the Middle East and North Africa.
Okay.
And then, I don't know where we were with that. What were you saying, Al?
More eyes by her view. It happened. I guess I was just trying to figure out the blendingness of it all. Like, there's a certain aspect of belly dancing that I think I know, or, you know, I feel comfortable talking about, but I'm wrong because it has to do with culture.
Oh, and that's when I also might say you might not be wrong, because belly dancing also is very versatile.
Okay.
So if you take this dance form and make it into something you want to make it into, but perhaps you've seen a dancer that gave you a particular impression of the dance.
Yeah.
It's not that you were necessarily wrong. What you were viewing.
Yeah, I've certainly felt.
You follow me?
Yeah, I've often felt like it. I felt like when I watched some belly dancers, plus in my head, I sort of did a couple of divisions. There's times I've been here at Zesty's and I've watched people dance and I thought they were doing a performance. I truly felt like I was watching somebody, the musicians are playing, usually three, four musicians playing their hearts out. The woman's dancing. And everybody's mesmerized, the audience, the people eating, stop eating, and it's a show and a performance. I've been here also where I've seen women dance with the same intensity, the same sort of spirituality, but it turns into a thing of like blending everybody in, where it's very inclusive. I've seen Misha come into a room, dance, and everybody just is mesmerized. And then other times I've seen her dance and she's well aware that she could almost control everything. And I like, she'll actually just sort of like make people, not even make the women. That's another thing. There's a certain beauty in all this. The women sometimes I think support the other women very well. I think some people are teachers. So their students come to watch their teacher dance. And they immediately get up to dance with their teacher when appropriate or when brought on to do so. And then before you know it, the whole audience is dancing. It's a very amazing, it's magical. I use the word magical because it really, truly, it seems to
make everybody happy.
Yes, absolutely.
It really does.
That's where I was headed.
And I could say, you know, okay, you're not getting a biased opinion here. It truly does make almost all happy.
Yeah.
And it does include everybody. You know, you are encouraged to be a part of the music, to be a part of the dance, and to experience, you know, moving in that style, which may be strange to a lot of people.
Do you have a lot of women approach you to be taught to be a little bit more sexier to, let's say, their husband or boyfriend?
It's a very feminine dance.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no denying it. It's powerful, it's strong, it's feminine, it's sensual, it's it's about, you know, depending on the music, because you are also translating sometimes either, well, you are always translating the instrument, but you may also be translating a poem.
Oh, okay.
If someone's
right.
singing.
Right.
Or something about love that's very deep, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so many things. And belly dancing is actually more complex than this is a belly dancer, that's what it looks like, and this is what we do.
Okay.
Because in many different settings, under many different conditions,
okay.
it could be many different things.
Okay. I certainly get that when I come here.
Yeah.
So in this environment,
it's very energetic.
Right.
It's also, you will get also my style, which I like to kind of really hone in on translating the musicians and what they're playing.
Right.
And connect to the musicians.
Okay.
I'm really personally big on that.
Okay.
I like to communicate with the musicians. Look at them and we just have kind of a dialogue
right.
together.
Right.
That nobody else really may even notice.
Right.
You know, I'm not sure. Hopefully.
No, I'm definitely one of them.
Because of the setting, I may also make it more energetic, more inclusive, more party-like,
right.
more happy, more
right.
social. You'll also find belly dancing on the stage with, who knows, maybe a 10 to 15 piece orchestra like in Egypt.
Wow.
Where you have orchestra behind that dancer, and she's the sole
wow.
dancer, and she's on a stage.
Wow.
And you're not close to her, and she's not pulling you up to dance.
Right.
There's performing at a birthday party to canned music.
Wow.
You know, to a CD.
Okay.
Where that entire experience is going to be high energy.
Right.
And playful.
Right.
And you're not going to find, you know, that real soul kind of aspect to it. That soulful aspect might not be as...
Right. Like you said, it's more playful.
Yeah,
it's
more
like playful.
And, you know, so there are many different occasions and belly dancing fits where, and you can like kind of fit belly dancing to how it matches
the environment.
Yeah.
My question, and I've seen you do this and you actually touched on it, your communication with the musicians is very ethereal. It's there. There's stuff going on. And I try my best to click into it. I guess what I'm fascinated by is belly dance as a discipline, as opposed to, let's say, going to a wedding. I guess DJs have this ability to make things happen, make people dance and this and that. You have a belly dancer dancing with musicians. You're locked into the musicians. I want to know, I'm curious, is there a specific instrument that you're interested in that you follow? Like, I think if you do tango, I think it's called the clave, you're supposed to listen to the rhythm of the clave to dance to tango, I think. In Middle Eastern music, is it pretty much like when you teach students, it's like, hey, listen to the dumbek, listen to the bass, or is there...
Well, it depends, because there's often you also solo the instrument.
So,
that's true. You know, I solo to the oud.
Okay.
As the oud is soloing with
right.
me.
Right, I got you.
So that's a string melodic instrument.
Right.
Well,
right.
It's also written. There's the Becky, Dumbek, Tabli, whichever name
wow.
you want for it.
that's all the same instrument?
It's the drum.
Okay.
It's the goblet-shaped drum.
Got you.
And, yeah. And that's, again, you see me do drum solos at the show.
Oh, yeah.
And that also is for when they're playing as an ensemble.
Right.
You know, they keep the
right.
the rhythm, the time. They kind of are the security of that.
Yeah, a foundation of the whole thing. Yeah, okay.
Right.
And then you have night. A night is like a very, is a kind of a flute-sounding instrument. It's very... I mean, I think they're made of wood. I'm not
okay.
sure. Or perhaps bamboo. To be honest, I should do that.
Mm-hmm.
and that's like a very hollow, very, again, I'll use the word haunting, kind of, and yet peaceful, yet spiritual kind of a sound. town.
Mm-hmm. Was that always associated with this dance and that music, I guess,
is
one of the instruments?
That is definitely, you don't see it often here.
Right.
We don't have a lot of
I think John does
wind
that on
players.
Synthesizer, I think. When
and Billy plays that on the keyboard.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, for some reason, it's always hard to find a nine player.
Wow. I wouldn't even have to ask for one.
I think it's about any eye.
Okay. Wow.
And the violin.
Okay.
It's a classical violin. It's violin. However, it's played with Arabic notes. I'm not a musician,
chords. Yeah, I got you, right.
And so it's played with the Arabic scale.
Okay.
As opposed to a Western scale.
That's a easy question.
Which is just different. I guess they say it sounds like it's out of tune, but it's not, and it doesn't sound out of tune.
Now, unlike other dancers, once again, let's say like going to see burlesque or whatever like that, when I come to see belly dancing, I have seen Michelle, in fact, like play with Zills. And so now she's not only an instrument, she's...
That's right. I do play
that. Yeah. And that's so much more the communication between you physically and the band.
So, still, you have to be good at that. Otherwise, you'll be out of sync with the rest of the musicians. And that would just sound like an ice cream truck that crashed.
On one hand, that might be good, depending on the neighborhood.
Right.
My neighborhood.
I mean, if you are going to play Zills, you should have some ability to, some musicality and rhythm.
Now, do all belly dancers that I've seen own Zills?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. I like I said, anything that is on my body that I feel confined by, but I do play the Zills well.
Okay.
I am great. Good at that.
Zillish.
But I don't care for them.
Okay.
I do at the end of my show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. When I'm going to maybe...
finale of some sort or...
Or when I'm going to kind of... So once the Zills, you're playing them, you kind of... No, you guys can't see me, but I'm doing this for Al.
Force me, guys.
I know.
Graceful movements in my hands if I'm playing.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
So it's actually, it becomes more staccato. It's got a rhythm that's different than the actual rhythm you're doing. And if you're actually moving your...
That's what I'm saying. Like, I couldn't really do this movement.
Right.
It's very, graceful.
With the Zill.
With a Zill in my hand playing it.
Oh,
I have to stop playing it and then do it with the Zill in my hand. I particularly don't care for that one.
Right, I got you.
So for me, I use my Zill at the end of my show when I want to bring people up to dance, when I want to kind of make more sound as a grand finale.
Okay.
As we're coming closer to the end of the
And I see a lot of belly dancers wearing bells and stuff.
I want to take a break from all of the movement.
Okay. So you're adding sound to...
And limit my movement to just Zill playing and maybe, in the undulations or shimmy.
Wow. Is that what it's actually called, the shimmy? Like when...
Yeah.
Okay.
So there are certain movements to belly dancing. We don't have, as far as I know, we don't have movements for every single thing.
Okay.
It's not like ballet where... So there are names to these movements because someone had to make them up in order to teach it. However, it's not as standardized as ballet, say, which is also very, everything has a name.
Yeah.
But there are, for example, the shimmy is a classic belly dance movement where you are, it looks like you're shimmying your hips, so to speak. But the drive to that comes, everything always comes from the core because that's kind of your energy.
Okay.
To me, where your energy comes from, where your strength comes from. But also in the leg, maybe in the thigh, leg kind of area. Hard to kind of describe it. You have to see it. So the shimmy is like a quick shake.
Okay.
Quick shaking. And then you have the hip drop, which is usually where one hip is going up and down.
Oh, okay.
But you're kind of, but you're transferring weight. So weight transfers the weight where it should be and one hip.
Wow, okay.
Or you're twisting that hip up and down, so to speak. Then you have the Maya, like a vertical big eight.
Okay.
So these are a few examples. But like I said, not everything is, to my knowledge, totally structured and standardized.
But if I went for belly dancing.
There is a belly dancer, though, I believe, who did standardize things, and she has a whole
tutorial kind of thing or something.
Tutorial thing that you can buy.
So she names a lot of stuff.
I believe so. Yeah.
Is belly dancing, obviously I know it's called belly dancing, but it seems like an awful lot of stuff is hip related. Is the hip like where you would center like more on one of music? Like for me it's interesting where you seem to be able to fluidly move where the one is in the music. It seems like you're able to do the hip or like popping, chest popping, I don't know what that's called.
Like the accent.
Yeah. And I was curious of whether or not that was part of a teaching thing also. Like in other words, if you were going to teach somebody the belly dancer, you would say, hey, look, it's really important to
follow the music.
Oh, okay.
Follow
the... I'm thinking that.
You know, I'd have to hear the piece of music that I was breaking down the movement to for them and count it out. So I don't count when I don't count. I'm guessing other dancers or most do not. Belly dancers do not count if they've been dancing for a while. You just
seem to have internalized.
You internalize the music.
I mean, it seems to be a ridiculous amount of like time.
I never count.
Okay.
Oh my God! If I had to count.
I don't.
Yeah, but see, I also, I have to make here is that the way I learned isn't necessarily how the other dancers learned. Is growing up around it, having been first.
Yeah, what 3 years
had on. The music put the calls in my system.
You were internal
and watching people do it. And just, I really believe that I was meant to, not to sound funny, but I really was, this dance was meant to be for me.
Okay.
And aside from growing up with it, being like kind of internalizing it all.
When you dance, you get approached by...
But I mean, just to add to that, not to say that I was predominantly self-taught, which is what I was, predominantly self-taught.
Okay.
I put a lot of practice when I was younger, especially even growing up around it. It's still, if you're going to do it justice, you still have to find and practice and love like anything else into the dance.
Is there a particular song or listen to as part of your...
Well, I wouldn't say there's a particular song, you know, typical Arabic belly dance music is what I would listen to. Now, I know we talked about a couple of songs. One of the songs that every belly dancer in the world has got to know is well used and was well used is Aziza, which was originally composed by an Egyptian composer named Mohammed Abdul Wahab.
Wow.
He was just one of the Egyptian great. Just amazing composer. If you ever get a chance to look him up, I'll write
his name. Yeah. Come in. Yes, sir.
Oh, I actually do have a sample of that song for the folks out there if they'd like to hear a quick bit of it so that they can know what it sounds like. If you guys, with your permission, I'd like to play it for a second here if you guys don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll play that one before we go into the other song, but I'm going to play that real quick, which is Aziza, and here it is.
Cool, thank you.
My pleasure.
Oh.
And that's a quick minute of
very
that.
Very cool.
You know, Al, by the way, Al, any more examples of dancing we'd like to know on this end? If you could just tell FX and I, explain it in detail, but that's an example of Aziza.
Right.
Yes.
That was helping me that there's a very good example of the Anai instrument. It's what we heard. Some of obviously.
I don't know if anyone can pick that out. But.
Okay. Was it the higher register? Like, mm-hmm. Okay. Did you guys hear that?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. There was something I wanted to bring up. Actually, Spontaneous had brought it to my attention. She had asked, hey, Al, you know, when you guys talk a little bit about stuff, you know, if you can make a distinction, you know, allow Michelle to make a proper distinction, let's say, between, let's say, belly dance or burlesque.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. You know, because my thing was, like I said, I'm sort of being educated, and it's a good time to actually sort of be properly educated on how things are, like in the word belly dance. So that, you know, I guess my question to Michelle would be, what, how do I phrase I guess
I may have touched on it.
Okay.
I think I may have touched on that before, where it is a cultural dance.
Okay.
However, it is also a dance form that you can adapt to anything you like. I adapted to everything. I dance belly dance to everything. Hip hop.
Okay.
Whatever you play, I will belly dance to.
I have seen her do that. I've attended the park. Outside.
I wish
we could see a demonstration of that.
Oh my God.
You get
I would love to see
the airport,
that.
I know where you're going. We're
Oh, definitely. I have to meet you guys. I hope to meet you in person one
Absolutely.
time. Absolutely.
But, yeah.
I'm there. I don't care what you say. I'll tell you. That's all I know how to do now. But, so what you were touching on, and I think we touched on it earlier, was when we had talked about the influence of how burlesque of the 1800s and early 1900s
right.
kind of adapted a lot of the movements and incorporated them in their burlesque shows.
Right.
Therefore, at least in the Western world and in this country, belly dancing kind of got clumped in with that form of dancing.
Okay. Got
but morphed somehow, but it's a completely different dance form.
Okay.
And it's not about one being better than the other.
Right.
They're just two different cultural dance forms.
Right.
Burlesque is, I mean, I don't know much about burlesque, but it's very American.
Right.
Is my understanding.
Right.
Belly dance is very Middle Eastern and North African. It's that's where it's from. And so... But because the adaptation, that's what happened here, I think. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I'm asking that. I guess it comes from a male perspective of me walking up to very beautiful women that are dancing. And wow, you're very good at, you know, not a common mistake I would make or have made, but certainly I have seen it, and I certainly have been friends with dancers that have been very upset, have been called one thing or another. Like, in other words, if the woman's belly dancing, and I say, oh, wow, that's really great burlesque, and she goes, no, whoa, wait a minute, you have no clue I am belly dancing. Okay, you know, there's not enough time to be properly told within a nightclub that I could have actually offended somebody pretty intently, not meaning to. It's just that I didn't know what she was doing. Now, luckily, I kind of feel like I know the difference myself personally. But I believe dancers aren't properly understood, I guess is where I'm heading.
Well, I'll let you off the hook a little because, I said, is I do think that, like, I can't really, every situation determines, that you know, what your experience is in this with belly dance. I don't know, like, if you had approached a dancer that way, it could have been a dancer that had a more burlesque style. I don't know.
Okay.
You know, because I don't think he was to another dancer who had a more like cultural like aspect where they were translating the Nai or being very soulful or, you know, maybe she didn't look very happy. Maybe in the moment she had some sadness to her look. Taking like a kind of emotional, soulful, dramatic look.
Right.
There is that.
Right. To an acting burlesque.
So, yeah, I don't think we've confused the two.
Okay.
However, then there's also the playful part, which, you know, maybe there's a creative. You know, I don't know.
Okay.
But I'm not gonna hold anybody terribly accountable.
Okay.
Unless they're obnoxious about it, you know?
Actually, that would bring me to something that I see here, not here, at Destiny's, but other places. I guess my question might be kind of weird. Let's say, do you have what's a bad experience belly dancing? Is that where, like, people are rude or somebody walked up to you and just...
I have to, off the top of my head, I have to say, I must be really fortunate, and I hope any dancers are, belly dancers are, especially.
Yeah.
Because I can't think of any really horrible
I knew
experience.
It. It's just the way she is, guys.
No,
I knew she
was. Not horrible. But so, comes to mind is when I feel like I'm giving a really good show, and the audience is totally not paying attention.
Okay.
That's sounding egotistical, but no, it's when you're giving up, you're feeling your music, you're in your groove, you're giving, because belly dance is very much about like this ebb and flow, this flowing back and forth,
yeah.
And giving and sharing and taking and giving, you know, and so there's that energy. And when your audience, like for example, I was at an event at a golf club.
Wow.
Where
worried
about, they were just talking, they were eating, they weren't paying attention. The band was there. I think it was with Joe and Raj, if I remember correctly. There were a couple other dancers that night, and they, you know, we all had that same experience where it's just like these people were just like, you know, nothing there's no one on that stage, you know. And here you are, like, really into it and wanting to transmit that energy.
Yeah. Do you guys go through that as being DJs? I mean, you guys actually do as much preparation in some respects as Michelle does. I mean, you're putting together, like, you know, playlists, and then you show up to do a show. Do you guys have the same thing where you guys put together something and, like, the audience just sort of stares at you with a different kind of energy? You guys have that experience?
Yeah, I know I have, I'm pretty sure I can definitely speak on Waheed's behalf. Like, you know, a lot of times, you know, what we do is, like you say, you know, we take time. Well, for one, we want to make sure that when we speak to our clients, you know, the type of music you want played, is there a certain time limit for certain things? Because sometimes they may have something special going on and they want certain music played at that moment. But other than that, we go through playlists and make sure that the flow is the way it should be, depending on the type of event that it is. So it's a lot of preparation, I can honestly say.
Yeah, and really quick, if you permit me, I did have a question for Michelle.
Yeah, please.
I was going to say for a statement and then a question, and I can know what the statement. I know I could speak for myself and FX. If you do go on Facebook and you go to Misha Belly Dance, you will agree with us that we will be probably road tripping it to Philadelphia this summer.
Stamp it.
Yeah. But my question is that
how about I show up in costume and belly dance for you as you guys come out of the airport?
Oh, stop it.
You will have no complaints.
Stop it. Stop it. You see this is how people go broke. That's stuff like that. As soon as you hear stuff like that, you're like, oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you're on Expedia, you're on Trivago, like, all right, let me get my plane ticket. I don't care how much it costs. I'm going.
Actually, FX really brought up something that Michelle and I were talking about, which is actually, like, money. Like, the idea that when I come to these shows, and I've been to quite a few, especially, like I said, here at Zesty's, and the girls dance. And then I'm always perplexed as to how, let's say, money's handled. I see quite a few folks essentially, like, make it rain. They'll throw money at women but never touch them, never put
right.
it, you know, it's like fall in. And that's interesting. And then I have seen men obviously look like, okay, you're going to shimmy up to me and I want to, like, put this dollar bill or whatever, like, on your hip. And it seems like total control of the woman, but other times it seems like some people are just like, they just don't get it. Like they think they might actually be at a stripper club. There's a confusion. You could see where men, I'm saying especially men in this case, get confused.
Yes, yeah, so for those
right.
who don't know, I mean, maybe Michelle could tell us, what is the proper etiquette when one is there?
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, yeah, we need to know that.
So the Arabs traditionally and tend to throw the money or fan that, like,
right.
have a stack of money in their hand, like, let's say one, like,
right.
and they'll, you know, kind of fan it
right.
over you, and
right.
it'll just shower
right.
down
it rain.
The floor, right, make it rain.
Right, now, I can barely make it drizzle, but that's okay.
There is also this tipping in the hip.
Okay.
I've experienced both. And as long as it's done in a kind of respectful,
considerate
you
control.
Way,
I mean, you
fine. Yeah, if someone was tipping me in a way that I thought was
inappropriate,
like, listen, buddy.
Right.
Get off.
Right. Right. Which I've never seen.
Right. Right.
To you.
No,
right.
I don't. Yeah. Nothing that stands out.
Right.
You know. And I consider myself very fortunate, so, but it's acceptable to do that too.
Okay.
I want to venture out to say that maybe it's, and I'm not really sure, but I always associated the tipping on the body with more of a Turkish thing.
Oh, okay. So
but I could be wrong. Again, I'm not sure,
all right.
so all right. Completely 100%, but it's what I.
So there's a painting somewhere where there's like a money hanging
from. It's my painting. But I know
century.
The Arabs and the Greeks generally tend to, like, throw the money.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
This will sound, or maybe certainly, do they, I don't know how to put this, but is it a cultural thing where they throw money, let's say, at a woman?
They throw it at the band, too.
Okay.
So it's not just the band.
Okay. I was going to say something along the lines of, like, okay, I don't want to touch you. I don't think you're,
I think it's more of an expression of joy.
Okay, good.
For how much they
okay.
are enjoying your performance.
Nearby or something.
No, with that particular thing, no, it's
okay.
not, I don't believe it's that. Because they also, like I said, they'll shower the band with
okay.
Money also if they... If they're so moved by
right.
what you're doing.
I got to tell...
Or if they've had enough alcohol in them.
I got to tell KFX and LeVar. I've been here one time after a Greek night that our host, Tom. These guys, I showed up a day later, and I'm telling you, I could look up... I'll probably have to take a picture of it and somehow show it to you. But I
Please.
Came
yeah.
in a day after they... brought a Greek performer here from New York. They bust Greek people here, all part of a community up in New York. The place
wow.
was sold out beyond crazy. I came the next day. There was money, and I'm telling you this, there was money hanging from the ceiling, and it was crazy. I mean, we're talking the ceiling. And Tom said it was a really good night, which, you know, and once again, we're almost not even touching on the fact that, like, it's all about fun. I mean,
Yeah.
The amount of what hugging and well, obviously pre-pandemic, but it was just like all about having a good time. They came down from New York. They performed. They had a, in this case, it was a DJ and it was a singer. The singer was Greek. I don't know his name, but it was amazing. But like I said, as far as the money was like literally on the ceiling, hanging from the rafters. And it was just acceptable. It's just like, yeah, that's the way it goes, Al. That's what these guys do. So, but yeah, I was always with Michelle as to how men approach her, as it were, you know, as far as the appropriateness of money, you know.
Yes. I did have one other question for Michelle, because I know it's belly dancing is, I would say, if you were to ask me, it's not only a dance, but it's an art. And in recent years, we have seen mainstream performers such as Rihanna or Beyonce and even Shakira kind of belly dance more to the forefront. So for you, when you were learning this, who were some people that you watched and was like, wow, you know, I really want to be at that level? Was it more family, or was it a particular artist that we may be familiar with? Who was it that you watched now that, you know, this current crop of people out there who watch music videos can still see it through these artists?
And kudos to them. Shakira happens to be Lebanese background too, but raised and born in Colombia. I think, believe her father was Lebanese.
Yeah.
He
right.
did a good job.
Right.
but okay, so I don't think there is that you would know. I mean, you wouldn't know who I looked up to, but in my uncle's restaurant. Who I really
legendary.
Yeah, so there was a Syrian woman who deflected. Actually, she came here performing with a very famous Lebanese singer. She's the voice of Lebanon. She's probably in her very late 80s now. Her name is Fayrouz. Fayrouz, and. So this dancer came with her because she was part of her folk dancing ensemble. She stayed in this country, ended up in my uncle's restaurant.
Wow.
She was not a belly dancer, but she was more of a folk dancer, and like a Lebanese-style folk dancer with a ballet background. And, but started belly dancing in my uncle's restaurant to make a living and to stay in this country.
Wow.
And so it was her that I remember falling in love with her dance. I was in love with it. I couldn't get enough of her style. She was so beautiful and graceful. And even her rhythmic movements were just so, so feminine and so smooth. And so she is one that I looked up to. As a younger person.
Did she mentor you, like sort of like take you?
Well, I can't say she didn't. She did because she made me want to study more this dance and practice more and do what she was, you know, emulate her style in a sense. But no, I didn't take formal lessons from her in belly dancing, but I took formal more structured lessons from her in folk dancing.
Okay. Wow.
So I learned along with the other girls in the Lebanese community in South Philly. We have a Lebanese community in South Philly grew up, and there's a church called St. Marin's, which is connected to it. It's like a block away from the Italian market.
Right. That's the second largest population of Lebanese people in the country, right?
I wouldn't say now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that now. But it's one of the first or the first. Well, I'd say one of the first. Granted, might have been.
Really? Okay.
First, yeah.
Okay.
Particular church, the church anyway, was established like 1901.
Wow.
If I got that correctly, it was a pretty long time ago. Yeah,
wow.
So we have generations of Lebanese in South Philly.
I
don't know how I got there, but my point was that
your uncle
this Syrian woman was one of my idols of belly dance. And then after that, like some of the great belly dancers, like Nadia Jamal was a very famous Lebanese belly dancer that I looked up to, who was famous in that world.
Okay.
Also, Zuhair Zeki, which was an Egyptian dancer that was very well known and famous.
Are you able to see, let's say, if you were to watch Shakira and watch her moves, obviously, and she's dancing, are you able to see possibly some of her influences by, like, you could say...
Who's influenced?
Yeah, who's influenced her? Are you able to watch?
No.
No, okay.
No.
She's made her belly dance her own.
But there
like
are...
Yes.
Right. There are dancers today that you can tell who influenced them.
Okay.
There are famous dancers, teachers. Some of them are even male teachers. Mohammed Shaheen, he's from Egypt, and he is known across the world. Because belly dancing is really everywhere.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Across every single continent.
Wow.
Every country you will find a belly dance community.
Wow.
It's pretty incredible. This dance really gets, it really sinks into people when they get involved in it.
I was going to ask Michelle how she fared through, let's say, the COVID virus and stuff, because if anything, her dance,
right.
What she's been, for lack of a better word, like intimate. I mean, she's dancing in small groups of people. She's weaving in and out of people. And then, you know, we've all been through this. Spontaneous brings this up quite a bit as far as, like, how we've been dealing with the COVID and so forth. And I saw an awful lot of friends, musicians mostly, belly dancers, as many as I thought I could see, move to try and do stuff like on Zoom in their, let's say, apartment or some room that they had set aside with some sort of backdrop. They would play what looked to be like canned music of some sort and dance and then like do either a BMO account or something like that. It didn't seem that it translated very well, unfortunately. The energy, the magic, a lot of the stuff that I'm drawn to didn't seem to, the fewer that I just glossed, you know, looked into. Is that something that happened in your community pretty heavily? Like you shut down, obviously.
Oh, definitely. I mean, pretty much not many people at all were dancing, and certainly musicians weren't working.
Right.
And people weren't having parties.
Right.
So it was definitely a dark kind of.
And so March of last year, yeah, right. So March of last year, April, and all that. Mm-hmm.
Now I was hired to do a couple of performances during COVID. I think it was during the confusion of COVID. Like,
ooh, that's a
know,
term. Confusion.
Yeah, confusion of COVID. Like, is it, you know, do I wear a mask? Do I not wear a mask?
Right,
do I go out? Do I not go out?
Right.
Is this enough? This is, you know, we couldn't figure it out.
How far away am I hugging you?
But I did do a couple of jobs that were outside.
Okay.
And that's why I agreed to do it. They were, and I wore a mask, which I got match costumes, like,
oh, okay.
You know,
like,
a jeweled mask that was going to match my costume.
Masquerade, or was that like a masquerade mask?
I don't recall the people being masked, but it was outside.
Okay.
But for the most part, things were like everything else.
You shut down quick.
Shut down,
Wow.
I was going to say. Any questions, guys?
I was, I was going to say, one other thing that I read about, correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, I've read too, and it always says that how belly dancing is, although it's seen as a dance mainly for women, nowadays we see many men try to get into that. I don't know how that looks, but I think that it's a little bit different than what women do, or is it the same?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And nowadays, it is accessible to men and available to men. And some of, and like I mentioned, Mohammed Shaheen, he's a famous Egyptian dance teacher from Egypt.
Do you know how old he is? Is that what you're asking?
I don't know, but I'm going to guess, somewhere between 40s and 50s,
okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't say 20 or 25.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yeah, okay.
But there are dance teachers
sure.
of all ages, and some of their – they're amazing. Oh, wait, also Tito. Tito is another Egyptian.
Isn't he one of the Jackson Five?
No. He's another famous. He's another famous Egyptian teacher. He's incredible, too. I mean, I can go on. Then there's several in Turkey. I'm thinking of one named, I think his name is Özkan or Özgen. So, yes, it is now acceptable and accessible and appropriate for both male and female to do belly dancing. It does have all its feminine elements, but I can, and depending on who's executing it, one may look more feminine and one may look a little bit more stronger in their executions of the movement.
Mm-hmm.
They have as varied as I've seen women in belly dance.
Yeah. Definitely varied style.
Are men as varied, or are they all like ballet looking?
No, they're very varied.
The men are as equally diverse.
You mean in style?
Yeah, or just like even musculature. I picture like a belly dance.
They're diverse.
Okay.
Like you'll see, thin guys, muscular guys.
I guess the polite way of putting this is, do you see people like me dancing?
Well, there are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess it comes, and there are. I mean, what it comes down to is that belly dancing is accessible to everyone.
Okay.
No matter what color, shape, or size you are.
I've certainly felt that way with women.
It's not like ballet where you have to be
height
emaciated. Yes, no, it's not like, you have to look exactly like this to be successful in this dance. No,
you don't. It seems like it's been a very embracing culture.
It is.
When I come in and I take pictures.
Definitely, because by nature, it is a traditional social dance, a cultural social dance.
Okay.
It evolved, just like, say, for example, salsa. Salsa is, traditional of Latin countries.
Right.
Yeah.
But not everybody's professional ballroom salsa.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess in a way you can kind of
there's a parallel.
Use that as a parallel too.
Okay.
Like salsa is a cultural dance that was taken and standardized to a degree and made like in that professional where the focus is more technique and styling and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where everyone does salsa, but they're not. But not everyone does ballroom dance.
Right.
Salsa. Does that make sense? I think it's kind of an analogy.
I have two friends who probably yell at me as far as salsa dancing. They go out and do all this stuff in California, and they're all part of salsa communities. And God bless them.
Yeah. Well, they probably do it more. Well, maybe they don't. I don't know. But I mean, ballroom salsa and cultural.
So
to me, I don't know, aren't they different?
I would imagine, right?
Yeah.
I was going to ask, when I watch, especially watching Misha dance, and I'm using her Misha name, it's been very interesting to watch little kids, little boys and girls that are coming here to, let's say, eat with family or with their moms and dads. And there's this, like, wonderful beauty. I mean, I have pictures of, like, little boys. They're probably like around 6-7 years old, just watching probably an aunt, I guess it might be, or a relative dance. And the look is amazing. And it's unlike almost anything else I've seen. There seems to be such a bond very quickly. I guess what my question would be along the lines of, when you dance, do you get approached by a lot of younger kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some
okay.
little girls have gotten into. I have little boys who, their parents might hand them some money to go or something. Some of them want to dance. All the children are always okay. enamored or in awe.
Yeah.
Like, I get such great response from kids. Yeah, I really do.
There's definitely a freedom and an awe there. That's
there
like,
is. You know, the little girls love, I mean, in this typical sense,
right.
You know, life is all the glitter and,
right.
you know. And,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but both little kids, boys and girls, they do find it, like, magical. Like you said.
Yeah, there's definitely not. There's something about. I remember seeing a little boy. It's, I guess it was his dad gave him like a dollar to go to throw up, and he held on to it like I can get rid of this. And I had some like, flowers, and I gave him some flowers like rose petals, and he quickly like kept the dollar. It's not like he put it in his pocket, but he just kept it, and he threw the rose petals. And with his sister.
Hey, that's a smart kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Why would I get this?
I was just wondering. Forward. Like, very, very nice. I'm trying to think of other stuff that we wanted to definitely touch on. God, we just kept on going and going and going. I guess there's etiquette and there's... Well, actually, I do have a question. This would be probably, I think, is there a person and or family and or situation that is attributed to starting or bringing belly dance here to Philadelphia?
Here's a Philly. Okay. So I have to go, and I'm not trying to plug the restaurant because it doesn't exist anymore. But in my experience, again, you know, I don't know one single person responsible. So the Lebanese community, I would say, is responsible for bringing their culture and their music and their dance form. After that, I would have to say my uncle's restaurant started in the Lebanese community in South Philly before they moved to Chestnut Hill,
Old City,
you know.
Yeah.
So the restaurant started in a house.
Wow.
It was basically a South Philly home converted into a restaurant in the 50s. Long before my time, thank you. And so between the Lebanese community bringing the Arabic music and the Arabic culture and the Arabic dance, and then my uncle, who was part of that community, opening up a restaurant across the street from the church, I believe.
Okay.
And it became very, well, it must have been more novel. It must have been like a novel place, and it attracted people from all over the area. It was packed. And they started having belly dancing there. So that popularized it. In fact, even the American the American culture must have found it risque, because I heard a story where my dad was. I know Uncle Eddie might have been arrested, like my relatives were arrested along with the belly dancer. Nude behavior. Can you believe that?
Wow.
And so we always think of the West and as America as being somehow open-minded, but it's quite prudish.
I'm Philadelphia for you.
This was back in the 50s. I don't know. I would have to say the community, the restaurant, because obviously they're arresting us for dancing.
Right.
But as one person, in Philadelphia,
gotcha.
I can't really. Now, I will mention Habiba, who has been the largest figure in the belly dance community. She's been teaching and performing. She's just a scholar of the dance for decades.
Big shout out to Habiba.
Definitely. Habiba, another woman named Nagla Fahad. Okay. I'm sorry. That's Nagua Fon. That's a famous Egyptian dancer. Nagua Fon.
Okay.
She's also, like, a well-known dancer from decades in this city. So Habiba, Nagua Fon, the Lebanese community, my relative's restaurant, getting arrested.
Yeah, we're making this very a lot of fun for you guys to visit. I'm telling you. I will pick you up at the airport. Train station. I'll do whatever it takes. I'll pay for dinner. It'll be a slamming time.
You know,
all right, that's what's up, because I know I want to go to a Middle Eastern restaurant myself, because I know Spahn has mentioned that she's been going there since she was 12, so her family has been taking her there. So I want to experience this restaurant myself, along with some dancing, so just let me know when, and I'll be right there.
As Michelle was indicating, the Middle East no longer exists.
It doesn't exist anymore.
We will be taking you testing, and we got you covered. Trust me.
Don't worry, we got you covered.
Hey, as long as I see dancing, that's I'm happy with that. It doesn't take much to satisfy me. So yeah.
Also, I guess.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I was going to say it definitely has been a learning experience here tonight, and I for one can say that I am thankful to both you, Michelle, and Al for teaching us a lot about something that we probably have seen a little bit on TV, had a lot of questions about, and now we've kind of got the inside scoop, and now we have someone now who we can turn to for more of an education on it, and I'm thankful that you guys were able to join us tonight.
Thank you so much. I should say it's a pleasure meeting you, although I look forward to meeting you in person one day, both LeVar and DJ FX. Thank you so much.
You guys will thank me forever.
We already are
thanking you now. You kudos, bro. Kudos.
When you come,
no doubt.
You know you're going to have to dance.
There you go.
You're not getting away that easy. You got to come. When you come here, you're going to dance. Belly dance.
Oh, well.
I don't think anybody. Nobody came to see us.
But that's all right. I'm going to accept the challenge. So I have just challenged us.
Spontaneous involved. She's
definitely.
It'll be cool.
I'm for it. I'm for it.
And Al, thank you. I want to thank Al too for having me.
I really
appreciate it. And Spontaneous, thank you so much.
Yeah, we got to do a hookup sometime too. It'll be fun.
Definitely. So, good night to you guys there in Philly, and my friend FX. Another great show. And I am always thankful to be here for these. But before we go, you do have something to allude us to in our closing here tonight.
Of course, you know I always do. And as you already know, we have a track that we always like to close on. And this one is actually a track from a legendary British rock band by the name of Whitesnake, called Here I Go Again. I'm pretty sure some of you may have heard it on some commercials recently. All right, so the song was originally released on November 15th, 1982, on their Saints and Sinners album, then re-recorded 5 years later for their self-titled album. It was released as a single and hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 charts on October 10th, 1987, and number nine on the UK Singles chart on November 28th, 1987. We are dedicating this track to Miss Tani Katane, who died earlier this year, May 7th of this year, 2021. Some of you may remember her on an episode of Married with Children. That's why I made that Peggy Bundy reference earlier. So that was an Easter egg right there for my gamers. All right. She was an American actress, model, and media personality that gained widespread recognition for her appearances in a few heavy metal music videos, including our closing track tonight, where she was dancing on her then future husband, lead singer of Whitesnake, David Coverdale. They got married in 1989. So with that, we will end with that track, Here I Go Again by Whitesnake. And always remember to love each other and just be happy. Peace, y'all. Be safe.
Thank you.